This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Early voting has begun for the November election. Last week, we covered the race for Indiana governor by listening to extended interviews with the three gubernatorial candidates, incumbent Eric Holcomb, Democrat Woody Myers, and Libertarian Donald Rainwater. Today, we're diving into the race for state attorney general. The race has gotten more attention this year than it usually does, thanks in part to Attorney General Curtis Hill losing the GOP nomination amid controversy. We'll hear extended interviews with the candidates who are vying for the position, Republican Todd Rokita and Democrat Jonathan Weinzapfel, both conducted by Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. What you'll hear from each interview is unedited. And since today's show was pre-taped, we can't take your questions and comments live like usual, but we would always love to hear what you think. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. First up today, an interview with the Republican candidate for Indiana Attorney General, Todd Rokita.
Well, thank you so much for joining me.
You bet.
I want to start by asking, maybe ironically, about the person who's not in this race, which is the current incumbent, Curtis Hill. Is he still a factor at all in this race?
Well, I'm running for Attorney General for the taxpayers and voters of this state. I'm running for Attorney General because we need strong leadership at a time like this. I'm running for Attorney General because the people need to be protected. Our economy needs to grow. So what we want to do is make sure that the strongest candidate was put forward this fall, and we did that. So I'm not running against anybody. I'm running to tell the people of the state of Indiana, the voters, the taxpayers, why I'd be the best. And I'm to that end, Brandon, I'm the only one in this race that has actually run a statewide office before. And we ran it very successfully, returning, 11% of our budget back to taxpayers. I'm the only one in this race who's taken a case all the way to the United States Supreme Court on behalf of the state. That was the photo ID case back when I was Secretary of State. So those are the reasons. That's the job we're going to do. And I'm looking forward to getting that job done.
Obviously, everything that happened with Curtis Hill brought a lot of attention to the race.
Yeah.
How would you run the office differently in the next 4 years than it has the last 4 years?
Well, I would hope that there wouldn't be a distraction, right? And you can't deny the fact that, there's obviously a lot of distraction in the office when the head of your office is under such a cloud and is so wounded. So remove the distraction. And then like I did when I was Secretary of State, I have a culture in the office that allows people to serve with servants' hearts. We worked very hard, and if those who are at the Attorney General's office and those that will come into the Attorney General's office want to work very hard, it's the place for you. If you want to serve with a servant's heart, that meaning that, there are some industries, businesses, vocations that you go into when you know going into it, you're serving others. You're not serving yourself. Teaching is one of those. Public service is supposed to be one of those. And that's what we had when I was Secretary of State. We're going to build that again, and we're going to make sure that's the case in the Attorney General's office. Everything from emails and phone calls being returned, day of or next business day, to the nuts and bolts, Brandon, making sure that gets all done, and being good counsel to the General Assembly, good counsel to the governor, and protecting the people of Indiana when it comes to their consumer decisions and how they're interacted with businesses around the state.
I want to talk a little bit more about a lot of those things you just said, but I want to start by, in terms of some of the issues that intersect with the office. Indiana's currently involved with, led by Curtis Hill, a lawsuit that seeks to strike down the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Would you want to continue Indiana's involvement in that lawsuit, and why would that be a good thing for the country and for the state?
Right. So it's important to note that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has already been found to be unconstitutional. Right. That's the decision that was already made at a lower court. And Indiana's involvement at this point is whether to continue making that argument as the case gets decided ultimately, perhaps at the United States Supreme Court, right? So that's where we're at. I would keep us in that lawsuit to make sure our points as a state were being made. I wouldn't get us out of that at this point. And that's because I believe, and it's been proven now with nearly a decade of Obamacare under our belts, that the promises haven't been kept. The promise made was that you can keep your own doctor. You can't. The promise was made that costs would go down. They've in fact gone up, in most cases tripled. Healthcare continues to get more expensive, and it's been accelerating in that increase under the Affordable Care Act. It's also a waypoint, for going to ultimately to a single payer system, that single payer being the government, meaning a federal bureaucrat, more so than they already are, would decide what kind of health care you get ultimately. That, I think, is the wrong way to go, especially with a state like Indiana, where we've done great things. Consider the Healthy Indiana Plan. Now, that predated Obamacare. I was Secretary of State, Mitch Daniels was governor. We created this program to make sure that those that found themselves in a gap, those that weren't covered by their employers, those that might otherwise qualify for Medicaid, quote unquote, that couldn't afford their own health care, could be covered.
But isn't the expansion of the Healthy Indiana Plan funded by the Affordable Care Act?
Correct. That's correct. But that doesn't mean the funding has to go away. Just the bad policies of the Affordable Care Act are what we're going to what has been found unconstitutional and what we would consider to find continue to find unconstitutional. So the funding, whether through block grants that I've supported in Congress or other mechanisms, can still come back to fund the Healthy Indiana program, where we can decide much more closer to home as a state, as communities who help support the Healthy Indiana plan, what is needed, who should get what is needed, those kinds of things. So the Healthy Indiana plan would stay. I think it would be a great mechanism. It's a great example of a state-based solution that doesn't involve federal bureaucrats.
The lawsuit, though, has also attracted negative attention because inherent in the Affordable Care Act are protections for those with pre-existing conditions, the lifetime caps. The lawsuit, if successful at the Supreme Court, for instance, would get rid of those protections too. So how do you say, well, I like that, but I'm also fighting to get rid of this law?
Right. So to be clear, I am for covering people with pre-existing conditions. And although the Attorney General's office isn't a lawmaking office, I'm not of the legislature. I enforce and protect what comes out of the General Assembly with the laws that are written. So, but I would be for and would help the General Assembly make sure that pre-existing conditions were covered. How? Well, there's more than one way to do that. You don't need the Affordable Care Act, right? The Affordable Care Act, as you said, is much more than pre-existing conditions, a lot more bad than protecting pre-existing conditions. So we need to protect people with pre-existing conditions because that's the fair thing to do, Brandon. And that's the Republican position at the federal level, at the state level, and I suspect at the local level. In fact, our own General Assembly in its last budget called for covering pre-existing conditions. So there are, what other ways to do that? Well, guaranteed funding pools. You know, just bite that cost right off and make sure that those people are cared for. Take the issue off the table is one way to do it, but make sure they're cared for. You don't need the Affordable Care Act to do it. So we can be very consistent in getting rid of the bad idea that is the Affordable Care Act, but still protecting people with pre-existing conditions.
The issue that's seemingly taking over all of our lives the last several months, COVID-19, how does the Attorney General's office and how would it under your leadership intersect in addressing the pandemic?
Several different ways, and it's one of the main reasons I'm running. We have found ourselves in a situation unlike anything else in our history, maybe even world history, you know, in terms of the ability of government to respond to plagues and COVID-19 and everything else that's come forward against the human race. And so what is the best approach? Where is the best place to serve? How do you do it? A couple ways as Attorney General. First, a lot of scam artists will be coming out. A lot of fraud will be out there. I'm the only one in this race that has a record of defending Indiana voters and taxpayers against fraudulent activity. When I was Secretary of State, we got 300 years of jail time for white-collar criminals, people who were stealing money from retirees. Okay? Record. I would bring that same experience, Prosecution Assistance Unit, for example, working with local prosecutors to make sure that we that the message is out there that if you try to do that in a post or present COVID-19 world to Hoosiers, you're going to go to jail. We're going to be about law and order. Again, I'm the only one. It's not a campaign promise with me. It's a record that you can rely on. So the Indiana Attorney General's office has a consumer protection division. So not just for financial crimes now, but for that, for cyber crimes that are related to COVID-19, for the basic knock-on-the-door scam artist that's out there, all that, we're going to be able to have bring a lot of expertise. We're going to be able to bring positive aggressiveness against these folks and so forth. Also, look, we need to make this economy grow as quickly as we can. So what does the Attorney General have to do with economic development? Well, a lot. By virtue of protecting first against federal government regulatory overreach, right? So you sue the federal government to keep their regulations in check. I have a record of helping to do that in Congress. I would bring that to the Attorney General's office. And then even if our state agencies got out of hand in terms of stopping the economy from coming back and growing. You know, we all have interests, and it doesn't mean we're bad people. We all have different interests, and we have different turf that they're trying to protect and all that. The Attorney General can make sure that all that is balanced. We don't want to have no regulation, but want to have a reasonable regulation that's still going to allow people to hire others to grow this economy, jobs. Only one in this race that's been awarded twice, the National Federation of Independent Business highest award. It's usually a legislative award. I got it one year as the Secretary of State for deregulation smartly. So, again, look forward to bringing that to bear as Attorney General.
This is Matt Pelser. Today we're listening to extended, unedited interviews with the two candidates running for Indiana Attorney General, conducted by Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. You've been listening to an interview with Todd Rokita, and we'll continue with that after a quick break. Later in the show, we'll hear from Democratic candidate Jonathan Weinzapfel. Last week, we covered the Indiana race for governor by listening to extended interviews with the three gubernatorial candidates. If you want to hear those, you can find them on our website or as a podcast. Just search for All in Indiana and look for our blue and black logo to find those and all of our past episodes available for free. Since we're pre-taped today, we can't take your questions and comments, but let us know what you think and what else you want to hear leading up to the November election. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. And one more quick note, you've probably noticed that we take voicemails during the show when we're live, and there's a new way to do that. You can download our new app called All in Vox Pop. It lets you send us voice messages we can play during the show, and you can send us messages anytime, not just during an episode. We'll occasionally let you know what topic we're going to cover in an upcoming show. And with a tap on your phone, you can let us know what you think about it or what question you want us to ask our panel of guests. It's free and it's super easy to use. Just search in your phone's app store for All In Vox Pop. That's VOXPOP. And you can download it from there. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're listening to extended interviews with the two men running for Indiana Attorney General to replace Curtis Hill, who lost the GOP nomination amid controversy. We're hearing from Republican candidate Todd Rokita and Democratic candidate Jonathan Weinzapfel. The interviews are unedited and were conducted by Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. If you want to hear Brandon's interviews with the three candidates for governor that aired last week, you can find those on our website or as a podcast. Just search for All in Indiana, and you can always find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana. Now back to the conversation with Republican candidate for Attorney General Todd Rokita.
A lot of debate this summer and likely into this next session at least around police reform. Mm-hmm. As Attorney General, the highest legal officer in the state of Indiana, what role would you foresee playing in the debate around police reform, and what police reform do you think is needed in Indiana?
Yeah, great question. I'm honored to be endorsed, number one, by our state troopers, also the Fraternal Order of Police at the state level, several local fraternal orders of police, and now coming out our individual sheriffs in our 92 counties. Very honored to have their support because, again, they know I have a record for defending Hoosiers, for being for law and order, defending Hoosiers against crime, being for law and order, being for the rule of law so that it applies to each of us equally. And that's all we want, no matter what color we are, no matter how old or young we are, no matter if we're a woman or a man. we want the Constitution and our laws to apply to each of us equally, to be treated the same. And so do our police. I mean, by and large, I mean, there's always a bad apple in every industry. We don't excuse that. We should go after that and make sure that the good apples can thrive. And every police officer I've talked to this year has said the very same thing. When you say what reforms are needed, Brandon, the first question we have to ask is what's being taught right now? What is the training? What are the practices? And then instead of making a political decision, oh, reform this and reform that and no, don't do this anymore, but do this all the time. That's just a political decision that's being made because of a crisis at hand. What we really ought to do if we want good policing is, first of all, listen to our police officers, find out what they're being taught right now. Once we understand that as leaders in a community, then we can decide, okay, together, with input from all stakeholders, neighborhood associations, community groups, the police officers, of course, themselves and their leadership. Okay, we've learned from this situation. This is what should change. But my fear, Brandon, is that politicians have not asked the police officers, what exactly are you doing now and what are you not doing? And I think that has to be the first step. As Attorney General, I will lead that effort. I would help lead that effort.
You've kind of talked about some of this in some of your answers already, but I think a lot of Hoosiers don't know exactly what the Attorney General does or have misperceptions about what the AG does.
Yeah.
So as you talk to voters, what is the most important duty of that office in your mind?
Right. So I think it's the one important duty.
One, right.
look, at the end of the day, we have got to protect people. That's what government is for. And protect people has several different meanings. It's protecting them from consumer fraud and things like that the Attorney General does. But it also means protecting their liberty. It also means protecting their rights. And so at the very first and end of the day, I need to protect all Hoosiers in the application of the constitutions, the federal and the state. Their right to assemble. Their right to speech. Others' rights not to have their property destroyed, harmed, or their bodies harmed, right? Public property, private property, and their own persons. I mean, that's all in the balance here. See, the Attorney General in Indiana is the top legal officer, top lawyer. It also has a strong law enforcement component. We don't initiate prosecutions, and I don't advocate that. I think that's the prosecutor's job, separately elected position. We do have Medicaid fraud jurisdiction, but not too much more than that. And that's by design. But we do protect the state in terms of criminal appeals. And there is a tremendous amount of responsibility to make sure that our criminal laws and the procedural due process decisions that come out in criminal cases all over the state, when one side or the other, either the criminal defendant or the prosecutor, appeals that we make a case at the appellate level that's uniform. Right, that we don't take one case from one county and argue it a different way than another case about the same issue from a different county. So when I talk about applying the Constitution and due process for everyone equally, that's the kind of experience, decorum, and maturity you have to bring to the office. You can't let politics kind of interfere with those procedural and substantive rights.
When you're talking about defending Indiana in court, not necessarily from the appellate level with what you just talked about, but defending state laws that are sued, for instance, how do you approach that if you disagree with the law and its constitutionality? How do you approach that situation?
Yeah, from a law coming out of the General Assembly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to set that aside, just like a judge would do every day, just like many professions do every day. An umpire at a baseball game. it's that same dispassionate zeal, right? Because you're doing the same job that you got to bring to these decisions. Now, it's also fair that this is an elected office, and voters and taxpayers deserve to know the different philosophies that come to bear when they're electing their officials. And so, I am pro-life. I am a staunch defender of the Second Amendment, and have a strong rating from the NRA. I again also have a very strong rating from National Federation of Independent Businesses. I think it's a good balance. At the end of the day, whatever the General Assembly passes, they are my clients, and I will defend them and those laws all the way up and down federal and state courts.
Then, while they're crafting those laws,
yeah,
how active a role would you want to play?
You know, that's a very good question. I think if you're going to be also a watchdog of taxpayer dollars, right, like I was when I was Secretary of State, you shouldn't spend a great deal of money defending bad law, right? And so if you're not going to defend bad law and you want to defend good law, I think you should be on call to help advise legislators if they want it. And maybe sometimes if they don't, but just politely say it anyway. Hey, if you wrote it this way, you know, you would accomplish X percent on what you want to do, and it might be constitutional, and we can defend it better. Those kinds of conversations need to be had, and that's another difference. Back to your very first question, how will the office be run different? Right. You can't be an attorney for a client if you can't communicate with that client. And clearly, as your station's reported and your viewers have seen, the communication between the current Attorney General's office and their clients, like the General Assembly, like the governor, has broken down, and so you can't. So, restore that communication, be a good commuter in the sense that what you say might be good, might be bad, might be ugly, but at least let it be accurate for them, would be the first steps. I have experience doing this actually already. When I was Secretary of State and we passed and defended that photo ID law all the way to the United States Supreme Court, I was a very active advisor to the General Assembly in writing that law. We found all the reasons through prior cases why that photo ID law wasn't working, why it was being found unconstitutional, we took it off the table. So what resulted was a very narrowly crafted piece of legislation that survived court scrutiny. And in doing so, protected the rights of individuals all around. So that was good.
You kind of got ahead of my last question then, but specifically as it relates to the AG's office and the governor's office. You mentioned it hasn't worked well. Even before the allegations against Curtis Hill, that wasn't a great working relationship between Governor Holcomb and Curtis Hill. Whether Governor Holcomb wins or not, how do you improve that relationship between the AG and the administration?
Well, again, you know, be available. Start with good communication. And again, that communication could be good, bad, or ugly, but let it be accurate. Let it be the truth. And I think everything else works out. I've been in this long enough to know that politics works itself out when it's surrounded by good policy and good intentions. And I'm not here to debate or litigate the intentions of the parties heretofore. but I'm excited to do this job. I've been very happy in the private sector. I've had my political career, quite honestly. But then COVID hit, and we see leadership and the lack thereof on our TV sets every night. And so Kathy and I wonder about best ways to help. And I wasn't looking for this race. This race found me. And now that we have it, I look forward to serving in the public sector again. But I've been very happy in the private sector. Learned a lot in the private sector over the last 3 years. And it's been very helpful to me to see other sides, and how regulations really do impact private sector employment and everything else. And it also taught me that, you know what, there's great people in government too. All the answers aren't just found in the private sector. And yeah, there's the private sector might work hard, but so do people in government. And those are the ones that I want with me as Deputy Attorney Generals and in the Attorney General's office.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, this is Matt Pelser. We're listening to extended interviews with the two candidates running for Indiana Attorney General, conducted by Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. You've just heard from Republican candidate Todd Rokita. Up next, we'll hear a conversation with Democratic candidate Jonathan Weinzapfel. And a quick note before we get back to it, you've probably noticed we take voicemails on All In when we're live, and there's a new way to do that. Just download our new app, All In Vox Pop. It lets you send us voice messages we can play during the show. You can send us messages anytime with a tap on your phone. It's free and easy to use. Just search in your phone's app store for All In Vox Pop. That's VOXPOP. Now, an unedited interview with the Democratic candidate for Indiana Attorney General, Jonathan Weinzapfel.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me. I want to start perhaps oddly, by asking about someone who's not in this race, which is the current Attorney General, Curtis Hill. There's a lot of attention on the AG's race in Indiana this year, in large part because of Curtis Hill.
Right.
What role do you think he still plays in the campaign?
Moving forward?
Right now, as you've been talking to folks, do they talk to you about Curtis Hill? Is the conversation at all come back to Curtis Hill?
Well, frankly, it starts and ends with Curtis Hill. For the most part, I got into this race thinking I was going to be running against Curtis Hill, right? And his sexual assault of four women, and policy positions like trying to overturn the Affordable Care Act, as an example. Obviously, things didn't quite turn out that way, but he's brought some real attention to the office, and most of it negative. And as a result, we've seen a real contentious race, especially on the Republican side, going through the battle on the convention, through the convention. But the attention that Hoosiers are paying to this office, and all of a sudden really seeing that, wow, there's some real responsibilities and an opportunity to do good stuff through this office. We need to make sure that we have someone of the caliber and the ethics that will represent the state well.
Going forward then, as you look at the last 4 years under his leadership, as you step into the office of Attorney General if you win this race, what do you do differently? What is your priority in terms of changing how that office is run?
Well, I had the opportunity to talk to some former deputy attorney generals, and it was a very interesting exchange. And what they have told me is that his ethical issues have been a huge distraction. His real focus on some partisan national issues has been a real distraction. As a result, there really hasn't been a focus on Indiana. And I think what I would offer is something completely different. I'm not interested in getting Indiana involved in national lawsuits. I'm not interested in playing the D.C. political games. I'm only going to get involved if it has a direct impact on Hoosiers, whether it's on our environment, the economy, jobs, wages, or education. I mean, those would be the things that I would look to, like a broader platform that may come about through multi-state litigation, but just as a matter of course, just to be another Democrat or another Republican who's fighting those fights out in Washington, D.C., I don't want any part of it.
You've mentioned it a couple times now, but the lawsuit that Indiana, led by Curtis Hill, is involved in, trying to permanently strike down across the board the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, we know that you would not want to take part in that lawsuit, but what do you see as the future of health care as it relates to how you would lead Indiana as Attorney General?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, we'll pull Indiana out of that lawsuit on day one. Now, obviously the Supreme Court is going to conduct hearings after the election. A decision by the Supreme Court is going to be well under deliberation and probably resolution by the summer. But I think symbolically it's important to stand up and say this is not good policy. This is simply just about someone's partisan political agenda, and it's not good for Hoosiers. Withdrawing Indiana from the ACA, or killing the ACA, would have a profound impact on Hoosiers. We're talking about 2.7 million who have some type of pre-existing condition, right? Whether that's high blood pressure, diabetes, a positive test for coronavirus. That means if Todd Rokita and Curtis Hill are successful, that means these individuals are going to have a very difficult time finding insurance in the future, or they're going to have to pay exorbitant rates. In addition, you have 550,000 Hoosiers who have received health care through the expansion of the Healthy Indiana Plan, which was enabled under the Affordable Care Act. These are folks that are going to immediately lose their insurance right in the middle of a global pandemic. This makes zero sense, and frankly, I find it unconscionable. And so while legally the proceedings may be well underway, on day one, I want to make sure that I'm making a statement that that's not how my administration as Attorney General is going to operate.
There's perhaps nothing that has dominated headlines over this year, obviously, more than COVID-19. It's consumed so much of our lives for obvious reasons. How do you view that from the Attorney General's office? What is the Attorney General of Indiana doing as it relates, or what should they be doing, and what would you do as Attorney General to confront this pandemic?
Well, first, probably one of the more important things that has transpired over this last several months is the governor's public statewide mask order, right, which he just reaffirmed yesterday again. Curtis Hill issued an advisory opinion basically saying he doesn't have the legal authority to do that. My opponent, Todd Rokita, says, well, we all just have the legislature deal with it. And, you know, frankly, I'm the only one who stood up and actually supported the Republican governor because, frankly, we have to get this virus under control, right? And especially this is, you know, 2 months ago already with the initial order. And at that point, we're thinking, we've got to make sure that kids can go back to school. I mean, job number one, right, here in the state of Maine, make sure that our education system is operating safely and providing a good, sound education for kids. And so it is imperative that this policy be put in place. And of course, legally, there's no question the governor has the authority to do it. So frankly, it is operating in a bipartisan fashion in supporting the governor's initiatives to help make sure we get this virus under control and so that we can rebuild a better future for Indiana. Now, within that, there are other various things that we can do. You know, the Consumer Protection Division, I think, would be incredibly important as we're protecting seniors from fraud and abuse. I think, you know, through the Medicaid, also the Medicaid Fraud Division, making sure we're holding nursing homes accountable. The vast majority of infections and deaths have occurred in the nursing home setting, and I want to make sure that we are protecting seniors. So those are two very concrete examples of things that the Attorney General and actually, well, if I'm Attorney General, things that I'll sink my teeth into and work on behalf of Hoosiers.
This is Matt Pelser. We're listening to extended interviews on All In today with the two candidates running for Indiana Attorney General, conducted by Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. After a quick break, we'll be back with the rest of the conversation with Democratic candidate Jonathan Weinzapfel. I'm Matt Pelser. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're diving into the race for Indiana Attorney General. The race has gotten more attention this year than it usually does, thanks in part to Attorney General Curtis Hill losing the GOP nomination amid controversy. We've been listening to extended, unedited interviews with the candidates vying for the position, Republican Todd Rokita and Democrat Jonathan Weinzapfel, both conducted by Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. If you missed the interview with Todd Rokita earlier in the show, or you want to listen to interviews with the three gubernatorial candidates we aired last week, you can find them on our website or as a podcast. Just search for All In Indiana. And since today's show is pre-taped, we can't take your questions and comments live, but we always love to hear what you think. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, and let us know what you'd like us to cover leading up to Election Day. Now, back to the interview with Democratic candidate for Indiana Attorney General, Jonathan Weinzapfel.
The other issue that's perhaps dominated, that's certainly dominated headlines and a lot of the debate this campaign cycle has been racial injustice and certainly as it relates to that, police reform. As the chief law enforcement or legal officer of the state of Indiana, as Attorney General, how do you see your role in the discussion around police reform and what would you push for as it relates to police reform in Indiana?
Well, I think I have I'd have the opportunity to play a leadership role as Attorney General. As Attorney General, I defend county prosecutors when they are sued. That means I'm going to have strong relationships with prosecutors throughout the state of Indiana, the courts, and as a result, law enforcement. So I think it puts me in a unique position to have the relationships to really have some serious, in-depth conversations about changes that we can make. I should also say that, you know, as mayor, I've managed a police department. And I have great respect for police officers and the work that they do. Can you imagine having a job where anytime you confront someone on the street or in the vehicle, you have to assume that they are armed and dangerous and willing to use a weapon? That is a tough job, and especially having to make split-second decisions, life and death decisions. You know, we have to give law enforcement the utmost respect. And frankly, they need to be involved in these discussions. But with that, I think we ought to start with what the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus has put on the table. I think there are some good ideas there. I think several things we ought to be doing is requiring police officers throughout the state to wear body cams. As mayor of Evansville in 2011, we were one of the first states to require and buy body cams for police officers. I think there's an opportunity to upgrade training for all police officers to the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy. I think we ought to eliminate chokeholds as an example. And one of the other things is making sure that police officers who violate standard operating procedures, who prove that they really shouldn't be on the streets, we have to make sure that they find a different profession. What I hear from my friends in law enforcement is that they understand that the current trajectory is unsustainable. We have to make sure that we are rebuilding community trust. And you know that starts with police departments across the state working with the community, and I want to be at the center of helping those discussions and leading and creating constructive change here in Indiana.
As part of the debate this summer and this year around police reform, there have been a lot of calls for what's referred to as defunding the police. Now, for some people, they think that means literally taking all of the funding away from police. What a lot of proponents say it's really about is reprioritizing that funding, saying, why are we spending so much just on police when we should be spending it on social services and mental health professionals who perhaps are going out to those calls instead of police in some cases? How do you view that sphere of defunding the police or reprioritizing police funding, especially as someone who's had to oversee a city budget and police budgets, therefore?
Well, I think this idea of defunding the police is nonsense, frankly. If anything, we need to invest more in law enforcement, especially if we want to enhance training. That is going to cost money. If we want to make sure that police have body cams, that is going to cost money. I think if you really want to make sure you can professionalize departments, we need to be paying police officers more. But that being said, we also understand that they are dealing with a lot of things on the street, right? Mental health issues, drug addiction issues, and they could use the help of social service agencies and individuals to help them as they deal with some of these complicated cases. So if we're serious about reforming our criminal justice system, I think it's going to take more resources in order to do everything that needs to happen so that we can rebuild community trust here in Indiana.
One thing that I hear from voters when I talk about this race is I think a lot of people don't know or misunderstand what the Office of the Attorney General does. So in your view, as you're running for this office and talking to voters, what do you see as the most important duty of the Attorney General?
Basically, it is to be the people's attorney. Obviously, I represent the state as the chief law enforcement officer, or chief legal officer, I should say. But it means representing the people. And especially in this case with coronavirus, making sure we're protecting them, protecting their health care, protecting their wages, trying to create a better future for them. We talk about reimagining Indiana, because we can't go backwards. There are a lot of people who say, well, let's get back to normal. Well, there's no going back to life has changed dramatically. And what this creates is an opportunity for us to really shape our future, right? And I'd like to be a part of those discussions and leading Indiana to a place where there's greater opportunity and that we have a more just and fair system for everybody.
If you're the next Attorney General, you will almost certainly be dealing with Republican-led houses of the General Assembly, certainly in the Senate, almost certainly in the House. When you talk about having to defend Indiana in court, how do you approach, as Attorney General, the idea of the legislature perhaps passing laws that you disagree with or you don't think should be defended, but it is your duty to defend them? How do you approach that scenario?
Well, as a good attorney, you defend your client. Right, and you represent your client to the best of your ability. There will be questions, though. Maybe this is taking it a step further, though. If there are statutes that are passed by the General Assembly that are clearly unconstitutional, that's probably a different discussion. But frankly, I have a job and a responsibility to do. I have taken oath to uphold the U.S. and Indiana constitutions, and have a responsibility to defend the state. And I would take that very seriously.
Hey, it's Matt Pelser. On All In today, we're listening to extended interviews with the two candidates running for Indiana Attorney General, conducted by Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. We heard from Republican candidate Todd Rokita earlier in the show, and now we're hearing from Democratic candidate Jonathan Weinzapfel. And a quick note before the last segment of the interview, there's a new way to send voice messages to All In for us to play during the show. For the last year, we've let listeners leave us voicemails by calling a phone number. You can still do that, but you can also download our new app called All In Vox Pop and lets you send us voice messages without making a call. We'll let you know what topics we're covering in an upcoming show. And with the app, you can send us questions or comments anytime with just a tap on your phone. Just search in your phone's app store for All In Vox Pop. That's VOXPOP. It's free and super easy to use. Now, back to the unedited interview with Democratic candidate for Indiana Attorney General, Jonathan Weinzapfel.
How active a role would you want to take in the legislative process as they're crafting these laws in terms of advocating for legislation or counseling them on, you may want to change this one, I don't see it the same way you do. How active a role would you take in the legislative process?
I would anticipate being very active. Because there will be policy issues that I feel strongly about that I would like to see the legislature tackle. And then on the flip side, if I see things coming through that are clearly problematic from a legal standpoint, yes, I'm going to be working with legislators to make sure that they understand the consequences of what they're considering.
As it relates to that, I'm not sure there's been many more high-profile cases recently than, well, there's two, and I want to ask about a couple of them. First, we've seen very recently a lot of cases involving Indiana's election laws, whether it relates to expanding in-person vote by mail, expanding poll hours, or how late a ballot can be counted when it comes in, an absentee ballot when it comes in. We just saw a case yesterday about who can bring a case to the courts on election day if there are problems at the polling places. I'll ask about maybe the most high-profile one, which is the idea of expanding Indiana vote by mail to everyone who wants it, at least the cases related to this year in the general election. If you were Attorney General and that case was brought, would you have defended Indiana's current system?
Well, so I'm going to make sure I'm clear about what you're referring to. So the there's a lawsuit where actually Curtis Hill weighed in, and I know as part of his brief, said that, well, if it's unconstitutional that there's an age discrimination in there, because as in people over 65 can get an absentee ballot or qualify and those under can't, then we ought to, if there's a constitutional question, then we ought to do away with that provision altogether, which I found, frankly, pretty disturbing. I think the answer is making sure that anyone who wants an absentee ballot can apply for one and receive it. We did that in the primary election, right? Didn't have any issues. And here in the general, the pandemic has continued. We're still in the middle of a raging coronavirus. It seems to make sense that we shouldn't ask Hoosiers to choose between their personal health and exercising their constitutional right to vote. You know, that's the answer I see. Now, anything broader than that is going to take action by the legislature. Whether there's we actually look to a mail-in ballot, mail-in voting process like they have, and I think in Washington, Colorado, other states. I mean, that's a question for the legislature. But it seems to me that precedent was set in the primary. There's no reason why that's not replicated for the general election.
And then the other. I'm not sure there are court cases as it relates to Indiana and the Attorney General's office that gather more headlines than those having to do with abortion laws. And Indiana's legislature has passed at least an anti-abortion law almost every year for the last decade or so. And that conversation likely isn't going away, certainly as it's gained new steam with the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and a potentially more conservative balance on the U.S. Right. Supreme Court. First, I'll ask you your personal opinion. What is your stance on abortion?
Well, it seems to me Roe v. Wade is settled constitutional law, and I think we ought to trust women to make the right decision.
And then, therefore, as it relates to that, and this kind of gets back to my question of working with the legislature and defending laws that they pass, the legislature is almost certainly going to pass laws in the future that try to restrict abortion rights in Indiana. As Attorney General, how would you approach defending those laws?
Well, again, I would take my job very seriously and my oath to uphold the U.S. and Indiana constitutions and my legal responsibilities to defend the state, and would do so and could in good conscience, knowing that that whatever is being the statute being defended is constitutional. If on its face it's unconstitutional, I mean, that's a whole different question And it's kind of difficult for me to balance those two responsibilities, right? Defending the legislature and an oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution. And so, constitutional issues dominate in that comparison, right? So, I mean, that would be my approach, but it's really going to be fact sensitive, and it's case by case basis. But in general, that's how I would approach those issues.
And then lastly, the current attorney general has not had the best working relationship with the current governor, even before the sexual assault allegations and that whole process played out. As you going forward, if you're the attorney general, it seems likely that Eric Holcomb will continue to be the next Indiana governor. If he is, and you are the attorney general, how do you see that improving that working relationship between the governor's office and the AG's office? And can you do that when you will be from different parties?
Well, if the bar is the relationship between Curtis Hill and Eric Holcomb, I think I've already exceeded that. And there's been some concrete examples already in this campaign where I've supported Governor Holcomb, especially on the mask order. I've applauded his movement and the public discussions with it regard to his diversity and inclusion speech. I thought it was a nice step forward and acknowledges that there's some real pain in communities throughout the state of Indiana. On the other hand, I've challenged him on, in at least the party's decisions with regard to absentee balloting and not replicating what we did in the spring to the fall. So I would expect to have a very good working relationship with him. First and foremost, this is about Hoosiers. It's about making sure government works for everybody. We had talked earlier about my conversations with some deputy attorney generals. And one of the things that has been described to me is that, and this is a person who works within the corrections division. So basically defending the state for every lawsuit filed by an inmate. You can imagine, this is a sport for them, right? And most of it, vast majority of it is frivolous. And, as she is reviewing these things, she and her colleagues went to their supervisor and said, look, we need to sit down with Department of Corrections because there are some procedural things that we can put in place to minimize the number of frivolous lawsuits that come through and save us time and save the administration time. Can we have those conversations? And the response they got from Curtis Hill's office or his lieutenants was, no, our job is simply just to vigorously defend the state. We're not going to get involved in working with the administration and making those types of corrections. That's not going to be my approach. I would expect there to be a partnership and working together about how we can best serve Hoosiers and do that in a bipartisan way. Now, clearly, we're going to have differences, but I think just building a strong relationship, having conversations, we're both grown adults, and we ought to conduct ourselves as such.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This is Matt Pelzer. You've been listening to extended interviews on today's episode of All In with the two candidates running for Indiana Attorney General, Republican Todd Rokita and Democrat Jonathan Weinzapfel. Both were unedited and conducted by Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Last week, we covered the Indiana race for governor by listening to extended interviews with the three gubernatorial candidates, incumbent Eric Holcomb, Democrat Woody Myers, and Libertarian Donald Rainwater. If you want to hear those, you can find them on our website or as a podcast. Just search for All In Indiana to find those and all our past episodes for free. And in the final weeks leading up to the November election, we're planning a number of shows about the election and the many, many issues surrounding it. But we'd love to hear your thoughts on what you'd like to hear, too. What do you care about more than anything else in this election? Is there anything you want to learn more about to help you decide who will get your vote? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. And you can join us on election night. We'll be airing a special hour-long live episode of All In at 7 p.m. Eastern on November 3rd to talk to political analysts and reporters about what they're seeing and take your voice messages and questions online. We hope to see you there. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Join us tomorrow for a live conversation with the author of a book on the history of the Ku Klux Klan in Indiana. And you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelzer. Thanks for listening. This is All In.